Fairfax had a wide mouth. Teeth gleamed in moonlight. General Pickett is gravely concerned, sir. He wishes to inquire if there are any Yankees left. He says to tell you that he personally is bored, and his men are very lonely. Longstreet shook his head. Fairfax went on cheerily. General Pickett reported earlier today to General Lee, while General Longstreet was engaged in the entertainment on the right flank. But General Lee said that General Pickett's men would not be necessary in the day's action. General Pickett instructs me to inform you that his is a sensitive nature, and that his feelings are wounded, and that he and his division of pale Virginians awaits you in yon field, hoping you will come tuck them in for the night and console them.
Well, Longstreet mused. Fairfax, are you drunk?
No, sir. I am quoting General Pickett's exact words, sir. With fine accuracy, sir.
Well, Longstreet smiled once slightly, shrugged. You can tell General Pickett I'll be along directly.
Fairfax saluted, bowed, departed. Longstreet rode on into the dark.
Pickett's division. 5,000 fresh men. Damn fine men. It was like being handed a bright new shiny gun.
He felt stronger. Now talk to Lee. He spurred the horse and began to canter toward the lights on the Cashtown Road. Headquarters could be seen from a long way off, like a small city at night. The glow of it rose above the trees and shone reflected in the haze of the sky. He could begin to hear singing. Different bands sang different songs, a melody of wind. He began to pass clusters of men laughing off in the dark. They did not recognize him. He smelled whiskey, tobacco, roasting meat. He came out into the open just below the seminary, and he could see headquarters field filled with smoke and light, hundreds of men, dozens of fires. He passed a circle of men watching a tall, thin black boy dressed in a flowing red dress, dancing, kicking heels. There was a sutler's store, a white wagon, a man selling a strange elixir with the high blessed chant of a preacher. He began to see civilians, important people in very good clothes, some sleek carriages, many slaves. People come up from home to see how the army was doing, to deliver a package to a son, a brother. He rode out into the light, and heads began to turn and fix on him, and he felt the awkward flush come over his face, as eyes looked at him and knew him, and fingers began to point. He rode looking straight ahead, a crowd beginning to trail out after him like the tail of a comet. A reporter yelled a question. One of the foreigners, the one with the silver helmet like an ornate chamber pot, waved an intoxicated greeting. Longstreet rode on toward the little house across the road. Music and laughter and motion everywhere, a celebration. All the faces were happy. Teeth glittered through black beards. He saw pearl stickpins, silky, satiny clothing. And there, against a fence, Jeb Stuart. Longstreet pulled up. The cavalier, a beautiful man, was lounging against a fence, a white rail fence in a circle of light, a circle of admirers. Reporters were taking notes. Stuart was dressed in soft gray with butternut braid along the arms and around the collar, and lace at his throat, and the feathered hat was swept back to hang happily, boyishly from the back of his head, and curls peeked out across the wide, handsome forehead. Full bearded, to hide a weak chin, but a lovely boy, carefree, mud-spattered, obviously tired, languid, cheery, confident. He looked up at Longstreet, waved a languid hello. He gave the impression of having been up for days, in the saddle for days, and not minding it. Longstreet jerked a nod, unsmiling. He thought, we have small use for you now, but you are Lee's problem.